Hello and welcome to the Sex Within Marriage podcast. My name is JD and I blog over at uncoveringintimacy.com, and it's time for another roundup of questions we received from our anonymous Have a Question page. As always, these questions come in. I have no contact info for them, so I only have what's in the question to go on. I take the questions, post them in our supporters forum, and anyone who wants can throw their 2 cents in. And then I answer them in podcast episodes and posts on the website, like this one. And we're just going to jump right in with question number one. So this person writes, I lost all sex drive totally immediately. I took in for my husband. I'm not exactly sure what that means, but we're going to keep going. Before the pregnancy, we were cool. He was so worried as to why the change, and I am so helpless. His massage moments that could have been a stepping stone to making love are no longer enjoyable for me, as his palms get harder every day. What do I do to improve my sex life with him? I'm so worried. I await a prompt response / advice. Thank you. Okay, so I'm making some guesses here. I'm guessing this is someone who doesn't speak English natively. So I'm guessing this person means that her sex drive changed immediately after she had a child with her husband, and I'm guessing it's her first child. And if that's the case, this is pretty standard. Pregnancy and birthing often change sex drives for women. During the pregnancy, sex drives can go up or down or stay the same with each trimester. However, after birth, it's far more likely it's going to go down. This change can be owing to a few things. Number one is that new mothers are often more stressed, which makes sense. They now have a baby to worry about as well. And if it's your first baby, then everything is new and terrifying. Stress produces cortisol, which depletes dopamine needed for sexual arousal. Men, on the other hand, often have a more relaxed approach to parenting and so don't always feel the same effects. The second is that new mothers are often more exhausted, and that, again, depletes sexual desire. Again, this makes sense with midnight feeding, babies that won't sleep, and the stress usually makes sleep less effective. Now, women who are breastfeeding get some boost from hormones to help them hit REM state faster to try and compensate for this, but even so, it's not enough most of the time. Most men, on the other hand, seem to prioritize sex over sleep, and so again, don't feel the same effects, and men tend to need sleep less than women as well, so again, it doesn't affect them as severely. Third is that women get a lot more oxytocin than men do just in day-to-day activities, and with a new baby that you're holding every day, that's even more, and if you're breastfeeding, that's more again. So your oxytocin tank is going to be full. So you're less likely to feel a need to connect emotionally through things like sex. Men, on the other hand, tend to run on near empty oxytocin tanks, and when their wives are more invested in the baby than in them, this is cut down even more, which makes them just want sex even more, just while their wives are becoming less interested in it. So then the disparity becomes even more significant. And lastly, touch is mindset dependent. If you are in a sexual mood and your husband touches your breast, for example, you may find that arousing, erotic, and sexy. However, if you're on a bus and a stranger does it, you're going to feel assaulted. It's the same touch, but in a different context. If you're at the point where you're touched out by the baby, stressed, and exhausted, then yes, your husband touch can feel far less enticing than it used to. But that just describes the why it's happening. So what do you do about it? I think the first thing is to keep communication open. Talk about it. Don't just bury it. Talking about it lets you understand how the other feels, whereas burying it leads to uncommunicated frustration and resentment. Second, make a plan for dealing with it. For example, invest in some massage oil to help with your husband's rough hands. Also, ask him if he'd use moisturizer to soften them. If it means he gets to touch you more often, I think many men would be willing to do that. But don't just put it on the back burner and hope it goes away someday. By the time that day comes around, you may not have a relationship to resurrect, or it may take a monumental effort to do so. One resource that might help is an ebook called Where Did My Sex Drive Go? It's on our site. There's a link in the show notes. It's a free ebook about sex drives and how to work with them, instead of being frustrated about how they're different. All right, question two. is actually quite long. It's about 2,500 words long. So for this podcast episode, I'm going to summarize it. If you wish to read the entire long question, go to the blog post. For now, here's the three questions that this person is asking. First is, his wife is a people pleaser and often prioritizes others outside of the family instead of the immediate family. This stresses both the family and herself out and deprives them of rest. He wants to know how he can help her feel less guilty about caring for herself. Second is that when his wife asks for advice, he gives it and then she just dismisses it. And he wants to know why or how he can offer advice without it being rejected and causing tension. And lastly, he feels that he always has to lead when it comes to sex. His wife won't read the books he recommends, listen to the podcasts that he wants her to, won't initiate, etc. He wants to know how to get her more engaged. And again, that's a very short summary. I'm going to pull from the context of the actual question. So if you want to see what that is, go to the blog post. There's a link in the show notes. So regarding prioritizing your own family self and rest over visiting others, sometimes I would refer you to the Bible. And one of the Ten Commandments in Exodus 20 verses 8 to 11 is to simply that, to rest. God knew how important rest would be for us. He instituted it at creation in Genesis 2 verses 2 to 3. And I don't think he rested because he was tired, but rather to give us an example to follow because we would get tired. We were designed with rest in mind. And when we don't take that rest, sadly, we do it to our detriment and as a rejection of God's plan for us. Even Jesus took time to be away from the crowds. He put his work, which is far more important than ours, on hold from time to time to rest. You can see this in Mark 6, verse 31. Now, if Jesus can find time to do that without guilt, then where do you think this guilt is coming from? It's not from God, and if it's not from God, then it's from the world, which 2 Corinthians 7 verse 10 tells us leads to death. So, I would maybe do a Bible study on this and show her this is what the Bible says about resting. Lastly, if she will not rest, then you do it. If my wife were going to persist in something that I knew was harming her and she would not listen to me, then I would set a boundary that I would not help her do that. I would stay home with the kids and let myself and them rest, and then she could go as she liked. And then she can spend time with her friends and extended family or her own family. And I'm not suggesting you use your kids as a weapon to make her do what you want, merely that that ends up being the choice. And that's a touchy path because you have to be careful about your motivations. It has to be done out of love, not out of a selfish desire to stay home. And it's unlikely to be appreciated either way. But no one said leading by example was easy. And I think the once a month cadence shows that it's not catering to one side or the other. It's merely making room for rest amongst the other times. Our church that we attend even cancels church once every 2 months so that we can rest and not have to worry about running or attending church, which I immensely enjoy. It's nice to have a Sabbath at home from time to time. As for the second question about dismissing your advice, I think what often happens between couples that have been together for a while is that they become almost too familiar with each other in some ways. And it's so familiar that some spouses have internal arguments that generally occur in their heads, and they'll spill out into arguments with their spouse. So for example, when she asks for advice and when you give it, because you're so familiar, she feels comfortable having a verbal debate instead of an internal one. When you say, just do X, her brain immediately jumps up with all the reasons she's already come up with for why that's a bad idea, and then shares those ideas. Not because she's dismissing your concept, but because this is the struggle she's dealing with. She's already thought of this and come up with reasons why it's a bad idea. If you had instead said, just do Y instead, then she'd bring up all the reasons why that's a bad idea. Because again, she's already had this fight with herself, and that's why she can't make up her mind. So instead, I'd say ask questions. You know, ask her, what are some reasons why X is a good idea? What about Y? What's not good about X? What's not good about Y? And then once you've gotten all the pros and cons on the table that she's come up with, then you can add your own in. Or you could say, well, I'd go with X because, and then you summarize the pros and cons that you feel are relevant. And then you leave it. When people ask your advice, they are asking for advice, not a command. You give it disinterestedly. And by that, I don't mean that you don't care, but rather that you have no stake in the outcome after you offer the advice. They can take it or not. That's up to them. And that's the wonderful thing about being asked advice. You get to be consultant. You do not have a stake in the game. Now, if she continues to ask what she should do, then you need to have a more extended conversation about what, when she wants advice and when she wants to simply be told what to do. Because the truth is that some wives, not all, but some, want to simply be told what to do. And not in all situations, but in some. And you have to be clear in your marriage about whether that's your dynamic and what those situations are. Sometimes the choices are too overwhelming for some, and they just want to be told what to do. Others would be appalled at that idea. I don't know your wife, so I can't tell you if she'd appreciate that. But if she wants you to simply tell her what to do, then guess what? You are now responsible for that decision. You're no longer a consultant giving advice. You are the decision maker and you have to deal with any consequences. And as for the last question, the reader went on for quite a while describing their dynamic regarding sex. And there's a lot I could comment on. Honestly, I could probably do an entire hour talking about just the things in that part. But the main question they asked is that, yes, it's often the higher drive spouse's job to lead. That's simply the way of things. The one that's most interested in something or the most fearful of the consequences of not doing something will likely be the leader of that thing. Once you accept that, then it becomes a lot easier. Then you work on being better at initiating rather than spending time being resentful that they don't. You get better at handling rejection rather than focusing on their rejection. Let them worry about their part, being better at responding, and you focus on yours, which is being better at leading. So if you want her to read a book, well, then read it with her. That's what Christina and I do. And when I have a book I want her to read, we read it together. She reads it aloud. I sit behind her in bed and rub her shoulders while she reads. And we've been through quite a few books that way because, like you, my wife has let many books sit idle on her nightstand that I recommended, even ones that she was interested in and said she would read, but she just doesn't get to them. But if I say I want us to read it together at the same time as a shared experience and she gets a shoulder massage out of it, well, then we do it. So rather than being frustrated with what she's not doing, you should work on finding new ways to approach the same outcome. Question number 3 is from a wife who asks, is it normal for men to be infatuated with their ejaculate? My husband wants me to swallow and even tried tasting it himself, but usually seems less interested after he finishes than before. I want to help him if it's something he really wants, but I don't have the desire to try it myself at all. Any advice? So I don't think infatuated is quite the right word. I think there is a sense for many men that an acceptance of their ejaculate is an acceptance of them. For a lot of men, when their wives won't swallow or immediately want to be cleaned up or runs to the shower right after sex, it makes them feel like their wife finds a part of them dirty, disgusting, or shameful. They want that part of their husband off of them as soon as possible, which can be pretty ego bruising. So it's more, I think, about feeling accepted. I'd say men generally don't feel very accepted by society at large these days, and the one person they want to feel the most accepted by is their spouse. So I think things like swallowing are a sign of that acceptance, and that makes them feel, well, accepted. And yeah, feelings like that tend to get deprioritized right after you orgasm. Our brains pre-orgasm and post-orgasm are very different. The blood flow changes quite a bit to increase certain areas and decrease others to the point that you can almost say we're not the same person from one moment to the next. And that's pretty normal. And it's not just men. Women go through a similar transition, but it tends to be less marked as the arousal is slower to drop off rather than suddenly at the point of orgasm as it is with men. But I get plenty of wives asking why in the morning they feel embarrassed, ashamed, or worse about the things that they not only did, but were asking for, sometimes begging for, the night before when they were all turned on. And that's also very normal. I mean, it's sad that you feel embarrassed or ashamed, but understandably, you feel a sense of, why did I like that so much then and not now? And the answer is that blood flow in your brain changes during arousal, and in particular, it downgrades the part of your brain that registers things you're uncomfortable with, disgusted by, risk assessment, and the like. So if you feel like it was a different person, it was. And just be okay with that. There can be an erotic you and a non-erotic you, depending on the context. And I think that's the way God intended it to be. I mean, you don't want your sense of disgust, risk, and discomfort to be desensitized when you're, say, trying to determine if the leftovers are still good, or when you're sitting in church trying to listen to a sermon and your spouse puts his hand on your thigh, or when you're driving a car and suddenly have a memory of the sex you had last night. Those are time when you want your brain to go, now is not the time, I need those functions that limit sexual thoughts now. I need better risk assessment, I need to be disgusted by things. Of course, not all of those apply to all those scenarios. For example, you should be disgusted if your leftovers are bad. You should not be disgusted if your spouse puts his hand on your thigh. But hopefully you get what I'm trying to say there. But when you're in bed and doing things that with anyone else would be risky and maybe a little gross, well, then it's a good time to have those functions kind of shut off or be downregulated. It can be problematic if they're so strong that they won't shut off at any time. Because the things you do with your spouse during sex should be gross in other contexts. That's the way it should work. And they should not be gross when you're with your spouse. So it's important that they turn on at the right time and that they turn off at the right time. Now, that's not to say that you have to like everything. At the end of it, if you're not interested, just say that and make it clear that it's not because you don't like him. Be specific about what it is you don't like. As I've heard some wives say, a mouthful of warm, salty snot isn't appealing. And that makes a lot of sense to me. And just because he's okay with the taste doesn't mean you have to be. For example, I love cantaloupe. Christina nearly throws up at the taste of it. She can barely stand the smell of it. So we're all different. Then again, I have also heard from wives who used to be disgusted by the idea, taste, texture, etc., but then something changed, their relationship, hormones, medical, meds they were on, anything, and now they love it. So it's also okay to say, not now, maybe not ever, but who knows. Hopefully that clears some things up. Anyways, that's it for today. If you have a question of your own, you can ask it on the Anonymous Have a Question page. There's a link in the show notes. If you like to see the questions as they come in and participate in the discussion before it gets posted, then consider supporting our ministry and get access to the forum where you can do that. Or if you are listening and you have a thought that you'd like to add, feel free to come to the blog post and add it in the comment section. And that's it for now. Talk to you next time.